Senate Resources have come to order. Time now is 15:45. We have a full committee with Senator Green, Senator McGuire, Stevens, Huggins, Wilkowski. Senator Stedman is not here, and my good friend Tom Wagner from Kenai. Today we have two bills before us. One is Senate Bill 214, which we previously heard hunting by members of the military, and then Senate Bill 267, which is a wildlife violator compact, which appears to have some inertia with it. And with that, first we'll hear Senate Bill 214, hunting by members of the military. And if we could have a motion to bring of a CS for Senate Bill 214, version C, before the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I so move that we bring CS for Senate Bill number 214, / C, before us for discussion purposes.
Okay. Is there objection? Okay. Hearing none, C is before the committee. And with that, we'll hear from Jody Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jody Simpson. I am staff to Senator Huggins. You've heard SB 14 before. Just briefly, it waives the 12-month waiting period for active military members and their dependents and allows them to purchase big game tags and the licenses at a resident rate. The CS that you have before you was recommended by law. It as a way to accomplish what the sponsor wants to accomplish in a cleaner fashion. And Mr. Kevin Saxby from the Department of Law is online to discuss the differences between the original bill and the CS that you have in front of you. We also have with us this afternoon Ms. Chris Wright, who is the licensing specialist for Alaska Fish and Game, and she can speak to your questions about the particulars of issuing licenses and the type of license that may be needed if you make this change. She is still doing some research, and I don't believe she's got the answers to some of the questions that you asked last time because we haven't had the time to talk with Mr. Saxby. He's been involved with the Board of Game for the last couple weeks, and we haven't had a chance to catch up with him and get answers to those questions. But he is online to speak to the differences and similarities between the original bill that you looked at and the CS that he is recommending here today.
Okay, good. Thank you. Questions for Ms. Simpson? If we could have Ms. Wright come forward, too, and get yourself, and Jody, you can just remain there for productivity purposes. And if you put yourself on the record so that as we go through here spontaneously, we can operate.
I'm Kristen Wright, and I'm the Finance Licensing Supervisor with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Okay, thank you. And do you have anything that you want to add at this point in time?
No, I don't.
Senator McGuire has a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, for your staff, Charlie. Did you consider the committee discussion regarding taking the senator's original bill, removing the big game stuff that was controversial, and yet keeping it as a specialized non-resident military hunting tag or privilege, if you will, as opposed to redefining the definition of resident?
Through the chair to Senator McGuire, that is in effect what the CS does. It strips out the language that pertain to the three dangerous species and the guiding component. It attacks the problem through, as I understand, the licensing provisions rather than the residency provisions, and Mr. Saxby will be far better at explaining this than I will be, but it does that. Please be advised that this does still eliminate the guiding component at this time, and you may want to consider as a committee retaining that. I've asked law to provide some language to leave that guiding component in place, but go through this statute that the CS contains. So they're working on some language, they just weren't able to get back to us. Because if you take a look at the original bill and the CS, you'll notice that we're looking at two different statutes.
Yeah, but let me clarify so we all have the same connotation. As the bill is written before you, if you're a private, you move to Alaska, you go down and get a license, then you can hunt the three big game guided species, right? Now, so that's the first part, and it was a little confusing there to me with initially, but we presently, there's being drafted a provision that would exempt those three species, okay? So when you got your license, as a new military person that moved to Alaska, you could not, under the license that was issued to you, without having a guide, you cannot hunt goats, brown bears, or sheep, okay? And that's what the Professional Guide Association has asked us to. And it's not about the guiding business per se, because I think it was only about three people that did that in the last year. It's more about the strength of the provision to have guides, as I understand it, in the residency part of it. If that makes, does that make sense?
Sort of, Mr. Chairman. Where I'm on version /C.
Right.
Okay, and what I still see is on line 6 that we're redefining resident as a method of giving these privileges, as opposed to your bill, which gives a special license for non-resident military folks, which I support. And the only thing that I thought we were going to do was look at 214A, your original bill, and simply take out the controversial three big game folks. But instead, what's happened is we've gone to this, and I know Mr. Saxby has a viewpoint on it, and I understand that, but we have not moved away from that thing that I have a concern about, which is redefining what a resident is. I support giving a tag to our military for both hunting and fishing, but I just don't like it doing it through the residency statutes. And so maybe Mr. Saxby could comment on that.
We can go to Mr. Saxby. Now, Mr. Saxby, are you online with us?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, would you put yourself on the record, and I assume you heard the question.
Yes, sir. I'm Kevin Saxby. I'm the Senior Assistant Attorney General that is assigned to the Board of Game and to generally to game-related issues.
And if you would address the question.
As I understood it, the question was the distinction between keeping the first version of the bill while deleting Section 2.
Yes.
And then going with the committee substitute.
Yes.
The first version of the bill creates a specialized class of non-residents who would be active duty military personnel permanently assigned here. And sets up a series of exceptions to the general rules for non-residents for that new class. What the CS does is simply define people who are permanently assigned here as residents, and then leaves whatever rules apply to residents in general would then apply to these people as well. So it meets all the goals of the original bill, because remember, the original bill also exempted this new class of non-residents from the guide requirements, as well as a series of other exemptions. It meets all those goals with a single sentence, and it's a much more legally defensible position to take. I can go into that in some detail if you want me to, but I don't know if you want me to.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we just respectfully disagree. I've heard both legal arguments, and I don't see any problem in with giving a specialized privilege. We do it for veterans, disabled veterans. We do it in other categories. It's a privilege, not a right anyway, so there's a lesser standard there. And I just have deep, grave concerns about setting a precedent, even though it's just in the area of hunting right now, about setting a precedent of redefining resident. I just think that is a dangerous road to go down, and I don't know where you stop on that road. And I personally feel so comfortable with giving these privileges. I have no problem. These are men and women that are sacrificing for our country, and whatever we can do to do that. But and to say, well, it only affects a few sentences of the statute as opposed to a paragraph, that to me is not a relevant argument. But Mr. Chairman, maybe your views would.
Well, to be quite frank, it's my experience, and then having read beyond that, is that generally speaking, soldiers, right, young military people, when they come, so it's consistent, their experience. When you see what they read and what they abide by, is that for the purposes of hunting and fishing, they're considered a resident. Period. So they go down and they buy their hunting and fishing license.
And I understand, I mean, the net effect will be the same, that they get these privileges and that they know that the state appreciates their support and so forth. But, you know, even Fish and Game brought up the point that how do you explain that? Because you would have to go through and redo all of the information available to vendors right now, which, you know, are small little hotels in Sandpoint ranging all the way to B&Js and Cars, to try to redefine. If you're a resident, you get these, and oh, by the way, a resident is this and this and this. It seems to me like, for clarity and informational purposes, you would have a single extra addendum that says, for disabled veterans, we offer these special privileges, and for the men and women that serve our country, we offer these. And maybe even a statement about why we do that, you know. But to redefine resident, I just think it gets into, and I worry that it gets into an area where other classes of people come forward and say, why is it that we aren't a resident? You know, let's say you're in AmeriCorps, or let's say that you're here with BLM or whatever, that those individuals now have an argument to say, well, there's a precedent. I'm stationed here, I'm serving in some manner, and therefore I want to be considered a resident. And I would rather have them have to go through the separate special privileges argument, because I don't think as many of those categories would ever win, because I think serving our country is a different thing. So it's really just more how you get at it that I'm concerned about.
Yeah. Well, the other categories of people I'm not familiar with, you know, how they may or may not be dealt with. The only exception that I'm aware of and that I've read in different states and that we're not aligned with is the business of military people who are sent here by a set of orders, as you will report, period. Let's go to the licensing part. And let me just make a couple of comments about the licensing. I mean, I think it's fair to say that there are two or three places, if you factor out the Coast Guard, that people would get licensed. Elmendorf Air Force Base, Fort Richardson, Fort Greeley, and Fort Wainwright, and Eielson. And, you know, 99.9% of the licenses will be issued there because that's where people go on post to the exchange or to a local gun store. And so, I mean, it's a culture people, I mean, I assume that quickly, but would you bring us up to speed as far as how that would be done licensing wise?
Senator Huggins and rest of the committee, I had a question to Kevin because I was hoping that maybe I could find a fix for Senator McGuire's issues about having the problem that except for these types of people, but unfortunately Kevin has been with the Board of Game and hasn't been able to work with me on it. So I'm not sure how he would feel about what I proposed. But the military people, yes, for the most part, do buy a lot of their licenses on base, but they also buy it elsewhere. So we'd need to make sure that it's somehow very clear so that they're not frustrated.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand. I mean, in Anchorage, someplace in a gun store or down at Fred Meyer's or what have you, but it's in a locale that people are accustomed to dealing with the military, so it's not like they haven't seen a military person. It's a normal clientele. Senator Wagner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was a little confused earlier. You said that this bill is going to be separate from another bill going to come in front of us that addresses the three game species that we talked about that are in the previous versions of this bill. Is that correct?
But I'm sorry, say that one more time. No, there's not going to be two separate bills. No.
So you don't plan to move this until that suggested amendment to this gets
here?
We're
working to the language. That's correct.
Okay.
The language is being worked now. Correct. Correct. And I'm sorry, I don't know. Do we answer the question as far as the licensing part satisfactorily?
Probably not, but I don't have an answer for her at the moment because I'm still working with Kevin Saxby.
Okay. Mr. Saxby, are there other elements of this that you either have some concern or you would like to emphasize to members of the committee that they should be sensitive to?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the original bill raised an issue that I pointed out I think the last time I testified, and that the Professional Hunters Association pointed out as well, that because of the exceptions for the guided requirements, it weakened the state's ability to continue to defend that requirement. The CS completely, or maybe not completely, but largely eliminates that concern. I think also taking the first version and deleting Section 2 would largely eliminate that concern.
Okay. Senator Stevens?
No, on a separate subject, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Just a clarification, as I compare the two, we have the original version we're looking at, A, includes independents as those who can receive non-residents. And this one, C, does not include dependents. Am I right? And why, how did we arrive at that decision?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stevens, is that a question for me or Mr. Saxby?
I think it's for you.
It's my understanding that if they are residents, then they get the same privileges that any other resident would have. And so we wouldn't have to carve out something separately for their dependents. But Mr. Saxby could probably answer that better than I can.
Mr. Saxby, did you hear the question?
I think so, and I wasn't aware of the difference, and I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, that's I understand. And that's an element that's going to have to be addressed, to be quite frank. It's an oversight on my part in addition because, I mean, I think if we take scenarios assuming this makes it through in some form, what we don't want to have is, you know, Sergeant Smith going hunting, but his 14-year-old son can't go with him because he's considered a non-resident. And, I mean, I think the provisions we're talking about, as I understand them, applies to the dependents as well.
Mr. Chairman, this is Kevin Saxby. I guess I would add that in the past, when some of the earlier provisions have been created for military personnel, to my knowledge, we've always included dependents in the same category as the actual military personnel.
Right, yeah, but as I read version Charlie, it does not have the provision. It just talks about the member, a person who is a member of the military service. Jody, you have some additional comments on that?
No, sir.
Okay. Yeah, that needs to be addressed. So, I mean, there's some more work we need to be. Are there other elements? I mean, to be quite frank, Senator McGuire, in spite of some of the concerns you have, I think it's much cleaner as it's written here, and I happen to agree with Mr. Saxby, with exception of the making sure we have the carve-out business correct, number one. Number two, that there be potentially a provision for dependents, if you will.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will take a stab at my own CS for you to look at and just consider. That would eliminate Section 2, add in fishing and hunting rights in Section 1, and add dependents in. And I think, just to be clear, that you know, we need to take these things very narrowly and as they come. And in the Resources Committee, we're talking about hunting and fishing and military members. And I think we know that, we understand that, and we can define that. I think that if you set up the circumstance that you do in Section 1, I've just been around here too long to see that you set up a circumstance wherein a simple bill that makes a slight amendment, suddenly we have, for purposes of XYZ PDQ, consideration of residency. And it happens quickly, it happens without a whole lot of people paying attention, and pretty soon we're in a place we don't want to be. And so I prefer the more narrowly tailored, we know what we're doing, and it's in this category that we want to define it approach, but I would love to be able to offer a version of that
sure.
To your
no,
staff.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Okay. No, I appreciate that in the cooperativeness. Are there other things, either in the vein that Senator McGuire was speaking of or in version Charlie, that members are concerned about? Yes, Senator Wagner?
This says hunting and fishing.
Right.
Okay. Does that include all aspects of fishing? Does that include subsistence fishing? Does that include personal use fishing? Does that include sport fishing or all?
Whatever resident could do.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty hard to support that because in your dip net fisheries, for instance, on the Copper River and on the Kenai River and on the Kasiloff River and your personal use net fisheries, there are already battles on the beaches. It's a mess right now. It's hard to regulate it, and as all this would do would be add more people in there earlier to compound that problem. I wouldn't be in favor of that. Sport fishing, I can support. But when it comes to personal use fisheries and stuff like that, that's a real stretch.
Yeah. Well, some of us have problems with the fish getting up to their fishing grounds, so they can't do it anyway. There's a lot of gauntlets for things to be run. So that's a debatable subject. But at this point in time,
let's put that in the bill too.
For all resident fishing privileges.
Mr. Chairman, we're not talking about fish getting up to your fishing grounds.
Right.
I want to make that perfectly clear.
It's all fishing privileges for a resident.
No. Okay. That's fine. But you're going someplace where I don't think this bill goes and we need to talk about right now.
Right.
I think that's wrong.
Yep. Understand. Okay. Other comments? Okay, good. We'll set this bill aside.
Well, check.
Okay. We'll now go to... Yeah, Mr. Saxby, if you would remain on the line, please, for CS for House Bill 267, the Wildlife Violator Compact.
Yes.
You see we have a CS for that?
Yes. Hello, Mr. Standby one. Mr. Bishop, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, we're going to bring back up Senate Bill 214. It still needs some work, and I apologize to you not getting to you. Can you make yourself available at a follow-on time?
Do you have all?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I apologize to you. That's my mistake. But I don't think we've matured the bill to such an extent that that we couldn't hear from you later on. We'd appreciate that. Probably would be more meaningful if you can do that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Bishop. Okay, next we have House Bill 267, Wildlife Violator Compact, and we have the bill's sponsor before us. Please.
Hello, my name is Jeannie Hosness, staff to Representative Craig Johnson. He is at this point in House Judiciary or House Finance, depending on which.
We're proud to have you with us. Continue on.
I am here in his stead, and he will try and get here as soon as he can. What this bill basically does is allow us to follow the same compact that we have with a driver's license. If you lose a license in one state, you're not going to be able to go to another one and get another driver's license. This is the same for sport, hunting, and fishing. Should you lose your license here or in another state and we become a part of this compact, then you would lose your license in all of those states. We are not the last to enter into one of these compacts, but we are probably the most used for hunting and fishing. I think there was a survey done by the Outdoor Council where we're the number one state for people to come to hunt and fish. This bill puts in statute a compact language, which is a compact that every state has the same language. So the compact language, which is Article 1 through 12, I believe it is, cannot change substantially. And that's why at the end of the bill we have Section 2 and Section 3, which allows us to deal with our statutes. And I do have a slideshow available for you if you'd want to go through that. And then I can answer any question about it.
Yeah. Are there questions at this point in time? Why don't we go with your expedited version of your slideshow until we have questions?
I'm not sure how to make this a whole screen, but basically, like I said, it's patterned after the driver's license. It was started in 1985 by Nevada and Colorado. A third state, Oregon, came in 89, and by 91, all legislation had passed, and the compact began. The why of the bill is mainly because of the poachers. This is showing two poachers from Missouri convicted of taking the bighorn without licenses in Wyoming. They were fined and lost their privileges for 10 years. Had Wyoming been a part of that, Missouri been a part of that at that point, then they would have lost it in all the states. The same here, Wyoming, two habitual wildlife violators convicted of taking bighorn rams out of season on Christmas Eve. What happens is they always seem to take pictures, and so that's where the enforcement people are very happy to come find the evidence.
They're stupid people.
Yeah, they have pictures of it, and they have the evidence in their homes. But here's a spike bull killed in Idaho close season, and it was hauled back to Montana with a Montana elk tag. And so the states that are closer together in boundary-wise, they have a tag problem. Oh, with this, okay. This individual was convicted in Arizona, and he was then convicted of illegal guiding in Colorado as well. And so they're finding them, and the states that are a part of the compact, it's making a difference. Shooting a deer illegally in Iowa and bringing them to Missouri to be checked as legal kills was good for a while, but then they were caught, and it cost them the $20,000.
Are those police officers?
Those were. They were. That's what they had confiscated.
Uh-oh.
From the bad guys.
They were the guilty ones.
Yeah. This fellow, you can hardly see. He's down in the far right corner, but he's posing with four deer and three javelina that were taken on one trip. And he'd been poaching for years, and finally an informant told on him. This is the most telling, I think, of Alaska. This is an Alabama resident who is posing with the illegal caribou cow. He and his companions had taken 11 illegal caribou and entirely wasted the meat of 9. And if we had been a compact member, they would have lost, at that time, their licenses in 21 states. But as it was here, he was able to go back to Alabama and continue hunting. The foundation is basically to prevent the poachers revoked in one state from hunting in others. It's easy if we're part of the compact that the citation would be able to be handed to a non-resident versus the arrest. At this time, the person who is a non-resident must be taken by an enforcement officer, usually flown to some place. If it's out in the bush, they would go to McGrath or Bethel or someplace, find a magistrate, and go through the process. If the compact becomes law, they would be able to give them a citation. Should they not answer to that citation, it is a violation and their license is taken away in all of the 28 states if we were to become one. So it deters the crimes. This is just going over the provisions, pretty much what I've been saying, that you're revoked in one state, you're revoked in all. Each state treats the conviction as if it occurred in their own state. So the administrator would have the ability to make some decisions on whether the license would be revoked. In any of the states, the violator has the ability as a due process to go before a court and plead his case. The failure to appear, like I say, is a violation, and they would lose their license in all states. The home state, which is the basic resident of the person who is the violator, that home state would notify the violator that he'd been suspended until the resident, until the terms of the citation are compiled with. The revocation information is held in a database, and each state would enter their own information. We have zero fiscal notes on this, and the Department of Public Safety has said that it is a an ability of the person who is in the lieutenant's office who would just enter that. They don't figure it's a lot of work. And then those states would be able to view the violations. The mainframe computer, these slides are a couple of years old. The Utah Department of Public Safety has passed it off to a private company at this point. In making the software applicable to 28 different states and what each state has saved that person's company thousands of dollars in personnel time. And so he is continuing to give this service free. Each of the member states are able to either download or to receive the information. One of the things that happens in our state, we do have the drawings, and this kind of information would be included in that drawing or automatic licensing systems that would prevent any revokee from obtaining license in their states. This is just a little low, too. We now have 5,000 names in the database, and there are 17,000 other individuals that have at one point had their license revoked through the compact. 50% are revoked due to big game violations. There are currently 27 states that are in the violator compact, and as the Department of Public Safety indicated, it just takes 3 minutes approximately to enter the data. This shows what's happened through 1998 to 2004, the high being the 1,873 in 2003, and it did go down. And Al Kane, who works for Department of Fish and Game, indicated that he felt that this was part of the compact working. This shows current suspensions of date, and this is old. It goes to 2005. But as you see, they are gaining on them. This shows a suspension record contributions to the database through 2004, all the different states and how much they're putting in. Colorado has a large amount, New Mexico, Montana. I think Alaska will widen this out quite a bit. I mentioned before that big game violations, 46% of them, but you can see there are other violations that are involved here. Waste of game, safety violations, small game, transferring license, false information on the license. Just since we've been here in session, just the first month of this year, there were 30 violations of people who had lied on their license. Seven of them were from out of state.
What is the threshold that would allow or cause the vacation of your license? Built in other states?
It's whatever their state law is. They agree to it immediately. They are revocated in all 28 states, and the violator can go before and have his due process in his state to have, whether it's a big game commission or a fish and game administrator, and they would discuss whether that violation equaled in their state what the violation was from the other state. You can see the age group here. Just younger kids seem to be in violation. I just read where in one state there was quite a discussion on an 18-year-old who for the second time had been caught shooting fawn deer. This time happened to be on Christmas Eve, three fawn deers. And they took his license for life. Some people felt that was a little strong, but it was his second offense and blatantly, but he was young. And there's quite a discussion going on about that, but it was the state's decision that he was in at that point. Each state's chief or licensing authority shall appoint a compact administrator. In this state, our licensing authority is identified as public safety. Even though Fish and Game is the licensing authority for getting your license, the compact and all the other states, they have a licensing authority that also does the enforcement. So you'll see in the bill where we've separated out our Department of Public Safety to enforce. They have an annual meeting, and the public safety officers that go to an annual meeting anyway meet at the same time. And so whatever annual meeting that is, which is a public safety officers meeting, they combine it with this interstate wildlife violator compact meeting.
Senator Wagner has a question.
Yeah, a couple of questions. You said earlier, you talked about when that data is entered. And you said the lieutenant could enter it. I would think, what lieutenant? You're talking about game?
Public safety officer.
But that would be, wouldn't that be after a trial? These people aren't, we shouldn't be entering their names in there unless they're found guilty of a violation.
They would have to be identified as having their license revoked, once it's revoked.
Okay. Once the trial takes place, yeah. And we revoke their license.
And then it goes into the database.
And then what would this do, if anything? I don't see where this would have any effect on people that were poaching game.
You would have to catch them. The only thing,
those people don't care anyway.
That's right. They don't get a license. But what it allows our enforcement people to do is, the people who do have a license or the people who are caught, they get the citation and they can go, and that allows the enforcement officer to stay in the field longer. Doesn't have to find a magistrate someplace. These are the states. I think you have this map in your packet. Red states are the ones who already have their legislation in process. The yellow states are like us. We have a legislation in process. Since this map was made January 1st, Iowa came on, so Iowa would be red at this point. And the ones that are blue that indicate saying no, Nebraska recognizes laws that recognize that hunters and fishing licenses have been revoked from other states. They at this point aren't a part of the compact. Oklahoma did have legislation introduced at one time. Missouri is in at this point. Texas is now in their legislative request to their governor this year, has asked them what statutory changes could be made to assist the program in performing its functions, and that's the Law Enforcement Division of Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and they requested that they get legislation for the Wildlife Compact. South Carolina is expected to come on soon, as well as Alabama, and Pennsylvania Representative Mark Gergely has just begun to speak about introducing a bill. So they're coming online bit by bit. And again, just the reasons to join: it deters serious fish and wildlife crimes in Alaska by individuals who hunt and fish in other states.
Yes, stand by one. Senator Stevens has a question.
Well, I just had a thought because as you were speaking, it sounds to me like if someone does a violation in one state and it's not illegal in another state, I think you were saying that doesn't necessarily follow. It depends on the state and what their laws are. So I was just wondering about species, where you have polar bears in Alaska and walruses in Alaska, but you don't have them elsewhere. You maybe have alligators in Florida, not here. How does that work? Is this sort of a free ride if they?
No, no, it isn't. They would identify a polar bear here probably as big game, and so they would also identify something in their statutes that would equal to it, big game or maybe if it's on a preserve or they would try to equate.
So they wouldn't get out of it just because of the species?
No.
I mean, these guys are take these are the guys taking pictures of themselves.
Exactly.
Pretty amazing. That's right.
Really don't.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Through the chair. Jeannie, on the database itself, do you have provisions for expungement? And could you point me to where they are?
They are not in this bill. It is part of the database that the Interstate Wildlife Violator Compact administrators, through their system, I believe that they have pretty much the control over the database, the removal of people from there. It's each state who would be able to say that this person has handled his or her violation problem. They've done their time or they have received a license now, and so they would be removed by that state's administrator.
Okay. Through the chair, I'd just like to make a recommendation that we put into the statute itself the laws that will govern entering of information into the database and removal. And the concern I have is just completely delegating that to a separate organization with, you know, a series of rules that we won't always have authority over. So just something to consider.
Could you direct us in the bill to where it shows the length of time or some parameters for how long in Alaska?
It's not in the bill. It's actually in our statutes already.
It's in the statutes.
The statutes for how long somebody would be revoked?
Yes.
I believe they, and that's where Al Kane can come in, but we also have Burke Waldron online, and I think
we can go to him.
Speak to that.
Yep. And welcome, Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
Good to have you. And if I might, I see back there is Representative Ramirez and his main honcho from up in Fairbanks. Welcome. Yes, please continue.
Well, would you go to the list of states? You
flipped yes.
That very quickly.
In your packet, I tried to indicate with it was a very dark map, but it had some white dots on it. That does list the states by name, and it has a few added to it from what you see there. Let me see your number two here. In 2006 and 2007, Mississippi, Illinois, Tennessee, Florida, and New York came on. And in January of this year, we have Iowa on. So that's 27 states, and we would be the 28th, should it pass this year.
Yeah. We're going to go quickly to Captain Burke Waldron. Captain Waldron, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yes. Could you just give us a quick overview of the suspension of hunting privileges in Alaska, what the general parameters are?
Certainly. Members, through the chair, again, for the record, this is Captain Burke Waldron with the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. Sir, is your question directed towards violators in Alaska, what the parameters are for license revocation, or is it more regards to how Alaska will treat revocations for people who are on the compact list?
Let's go Alaska, and then how people will be treated by the compact.
Okay, the bull. All right, fair enough. Currently, for violations committed in Alaska, license revocations are done through the court system. There are no offenses that once you commit, they will automatically get someone's license revoked. However, you know, there are a few statutes that commonly would get someone's license revoked, you know, such as hunting in a closed season or takeover limits, spotlighting, things of those sorts. Revocations typically are between 1 and 3 years. However, there have been occasions where we have had revocations go out as far as, the most I am aware is 10 years, and the revocation was part of the individual's conditions of probation. They weren't an actual, their license wasn't revoked, it was just their condition, their probation, they weren't allowed to hunt for 10 years. What will happen with those people is the administrator in Alaska would enter that person into the database as revoked and indicate their period of revocation and when their revocation ends, so that if the person went in a different state to buy a license, the revocation list, the compact list would show when that revocation is going to expire or has expired. And for people coming to Alaska, that list would indicate the same. So that would help eliminate some of the, one question was asked about control of the list in terms of who removes people from the list. So even though the person may still be on the list, their period of revocation should be indicated on the revocation list. So the state the prospective licensee applies for would be able to see that the license is not revoked, that the period has expired. Did that answer the question?
Yes. Let me ask you, Mr. Waldron, let's take the infamous crow, which is a migratory bird, and I think we have an international treaty on, and there's a season factor now and a whole bunch of variables. As I recall, in the state of Alaska, crows go about as far north as Juneau, maybe a little further, and that's kind of the end of it, and then ravens, you get an intermix of ravens. But if you're down in Oklahoma, there's a place, the crow capital of the world, I forget the name of it, Fort something, and you can kill crows by the hundreds. If you shoot a crow in Juneau, you have to use the feathers, eat the meat, all sorts of things. How do you connect those two?
Through the chair, the connection would be if the person obviously is convicted, and does a court in Alaska see that the offense was egregious enough to revoke that person's privileges. If that person's privileges are revoked, well, then that name would go into the database, and assuming Oklahoma, which it currently is not, but a state similar to Oklahoma that was a member state, they would honor that revocation. And that's very similar to the driver's license compact now, in that Alaska honors every other state's revocations, regardless of whether it was an offense that Alaska would have revoked for in the first place. Many states in the lower 48 revoke someone's license for an unpaid speeding ticket. Alaska does not revoke your license for an unpaid speeding ticket. However, if someone from New Mexico has their license revoked for an unpaid speeding ticket and they drive in Alaska, they will get charged with driving on a suspended or revoked driver's license, and the Division of Motor Vehicles will not issue that person an Alaska driver's license until they correct their misdeeds, so to speak, in New Mexico. So it mirrors the DMV licensing in that regard.
Yeah, and one follow-up on that. And the federal species, as I recall, historically have sort of a higher, well, it's not a higher threshold. The punishment factor is often more severe. I don't know, doves, ducks, I mean, you name your federal species. Is any of that taken into account?
It's taken into account, if the compact language was passed, it wouldn't be taken into account any more than it is at this point in time. And typically, I'm racking my brain in my history. I cannot recall a single Alaska resident whose license hunting privileges were revoked or suspended for a small game or migratory bird violation, only big game violations. I may be missing a few there, but it takes a fairly serious offense to revoke someone's hunting privileges in Alaska, and typically those are your moose, your caribou, your bears, your sheep. I can't think of any that were done because of a, I shouldn't say that, I guess, there's a few Fur Bear, you know, traffic license violations that have cost people their traffic licenses. And obviously, this isn't directed just at, it's directed at fish as well as hunting as well. But the interspecies, again, I guess, Alaska wouldn't consider someone's privileges revoked unless they were, except for two reasons, unless they were revoked in a different state, in which case we would honor that state's, just because, you know, poaching doves in Alaska is not a serious offense. In some states, it could be a very serious offense. And if someone is hunting in a state where it's a serious offense, well, they need to be obey those the laws of that land, and we honor that. The other way to get someone's privileges revoked or suspended is if they're issued a citation and they don't respond to the citation. And again, in those circumstances, that's basically a court order that's not being followed, and we're going to honor that court's order until that person responds to their violation. So the circumstance I'm talking about there would be if an Alaska resident goes to Colorado and shoots too many pheasants and gets issued a citation for that offense and does not appear in Colorado court and does not take action on that citation, well, then that Alaska resident would be notified in Alaska that their license will be revoked if they do not take care of that citation. And that person is given a due process hearing at their request. And that's where it would be weighed in. Well, you know, we don't really care that you know, a judge or the administrator may say, it's not important to us that he took too many pheasants, so therefore we're not going to revoke his Alaska privileges. And then the name would not be entered into the database either.
Thank you. I'll come back to you in a moment. Senator Wagner?
Yeah, no, I want to ask Captain Waldron a question. And this kind of goes down to what's good for the goose is good for the gander. About 3 years ago, and I don't know what the result was because I never saw this published, but about 3 years ago in Western Alaska, two young men went out and literally slaughtered a bunch of musk oxen. And it may have been in the papers, but I have never seen a news report of any conviction or any punishment dealt out on that offense. And while it's not directly related to this, it is indirectly related to it. Because my point is, if we're not going to punish our own people for egregious acts, why should we tie up with a state, other group of states, to do that? And do you know about that case and what the final outcome of it was?
I cannot speak specifically about that case. I'm aware of a couple of cases involving muskox, and I am not sure what the final outcome is. All I can assure you is that, you know, we investigate a case, and if there's enough evidence to put forth to file criminal charges, we present that evidence to a prosecuting attorney and request that they follow through with the charges and hopefully get a favorable conviction in court. Oftentimes, for a variety of reasons, which is a whole separate issue, I'm sure, you know, we don't get the convictions we'd like to see. The case may be dismissed for evidentiary reasons. It may be dismissed for, court calendaring reasons, a whole variety of reasons. I do understand what you're saying. I appreciate what you're saying. And I sure hope that the instances where there is enough evidence to go forth to charge someone, I hope the instances where those cases go away without a prosecution are minimal, and I hope they become more minimal in the future.
Well, I guess I'd say I'm giving you an opportunity to make a believer out of me as to our system, whether it works or not. And could you research that and get back to me with the final results?
I can. Senator, what was your... I couldn't hear your name.
Senator Wagoner.
I need to know who to respond to.
Yeah, Senator Wagoner from Keene.
Okay.
Yes.
Through the chair, there was a case in Arizona where the court did not get the 180-day notification out in time to this violator, and the violator took it to court. He said, I didn't get my due process. I didn't get my paperwork in time. And through the court action, the court chose the violator law over the state law dealing with the due process or paper failure, timely fashion. So the compact law has a stronger hold in the eyes of the court system and the weighing, I think, of the law. Because had that 180-day stopped the process, then the weight of what the compact means would have been negated. And that's how they chose to still prosecute that violator.
Yeah, Senator Wagner.
This is different than what we've been talking about, but and I understand the program, and I probably will support it, but we need to be very cautious of this program. You know, this state also, if somebody wishes to, if somebody charges a citizen of the state of Alaska with a crime outside the state of Alaska's jurisdiction, they can extradite that person out of this state, and the governor of the state of Alaska will not step in and stop it, no matter what the circumstances are. And I've been involved in at least one case of that nature where the gentleman who was accused of the crime was on the North Slope working and turning in timesheets and punching time clock at the time, and the governor of this state still would not step in and intercede. So sometimes when you make pacts with other states, you got to be very careful what you make, and because sometimes the results, the end results, are not what you think they were going to be. We got to be very careful on this.
Yeah. Mr. Waldron, let's help me out here for a moment. If someone in Alaska shoots, black bear, and they take the hide out of state, it's not the Hatch Act. What's the act that they violate?
The Lacey Act.
Lacey Act, right. So that becomes a federal crime. Should we be aware or be sensitive to that sort of thing as far as, you know, how many Lacey Act violations or prosecutions we have in Alaska versus other states? Whether, you know, and I'll just draw a comparison for a moment. You said earlier that you didn't know of a single instance of somebody with a small game violation having their license revoked. In Stuttgart, Arkansas, it may be 100% different. They like ducks down in Stuttgart, Arkansas. And they will hold you accountable. I've never been hunting in Arkansas for ducks, but I know that they're pretty proud of ducks in that neck of the woods. So in one instance, you get one series of treatment, but yet we would honor that, and you said that no one in Alaska, to your knowledge, had their license suspended for a small game hunting license or hunting violation. Your thoughts on that?
I guess my thoughts are, like I tried to express earlier, that when someone is hunting in Alaska or Arkansas or California or anywhere, that person is required to know the laws and regulations in that area, and it's incumbent upon them to follow those laws and regulations and the consequences that bear with those, with violating those laws. If Arkansas values their waterfowl, and just because I'm not from Arkansas, I choose not to value the waterfowl, I'm sorry, and I'm then convicted for violating those waterfowl regulations, you know, the onus is on me to, as hunting there, to follow those laws and regulations and the penalties that follow with it. Just like, we would expect the same with someone who comes to Alaska and hunts here. Poachers are very mobile. And you know, if they hunt in Arkansas, where waterfowl is important to them, and they don't care what's important to Arkansas, and they violate the laws there, they'll certainly come to Alaska and violate the laws here that we hold near and dear to us. You know, they'll violate our sheep regulations, our moose regulations. They're mobile, and it's not about sportsmen like, and I'm talking about the serious poachers, the serious violators here. You know, I get phone calls every year. I shouldn't say myself personally, but my department gets phone calls every year from people asking if we're members of the compact. People are calling for one reason only. I want to know if they can come up here and hunt, because they're not allowed to hunt in many other states. And so it helps. It's already against the law to hunt in Alaska if your license is revoked in another state. Unfortunately, with what doesn't come with that is any means for us to know if someone is revoked in another state. And that is the beauty of the compact. It's a published list that we'll have access to versus every, you know, hundreds of thousands of people apply for a hunting and fishing license every year. The only way for us to know if they're revoked in another state would be to call each and every individual state, their licensing agency down there, and ask if that person is revoked, which obviously is just not practical and way overburdensome. We will have a published list, at least for the 27 states that are now part of the compact, where we want the information to be readily available to us.
Right, and on that, Mr. or Captain Waldron, it also applies to fish. Is that correct?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Yes, Senator Wagner.
Question about that. You said you'd have a list. How is that list going to be made available to the vendors that are selling the licenses?
That issue right now is not resolved. It will be available to people who get licensed online. And it will, you know, and it will also be available to public safety members to verify on an individual basis, you know, as we see fit, similar to running someone's driver's license in the computer. Because our licensing system is not yet computerized, it will not be immediately available for each and every applicant at the various vendors in Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes.
When you apply for a license, you sign.
Brisbane
and Johnson, District 28. When you apply for a license, you sign basically an affidavit saying that my license has not been revoked in another state, subject to a 1-year penalty and a $10,000 fine. If when you get that license, they run a check against it, we have recourse right then for a felony. That's a fairly serious crime. And so as opposed to never knowing until we get in a situation where we become computerized and can check, I've been to states where you do this and you just give them your driver's license and they type your name in and you're issued a license. We're not there yet. Hopefully someday we will. The physical note on that I'm sure would be quite large, and the way we vend our license is not conducive to that. But if you violate that, you're subject to a 1-year and a $10,000 fine. So it's a fairly substantial fine. And now we have a way to go back and track it, where with the compact we'd have a way to go back and track it, but without it we basically have none.
You sure that's a felony?
I'll have to, Captain Waldron, would you correct me on that? Is that a felony?
No, it's unsworn falsification, 1 year in jail, $10,000 fine.
But it is not a felony.
It is not a felony.
I stand corrected.
It can be a felony under, I believe, the hunting licenses. It is not.
I stand corrected, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Well, Captain Waldron, just for your information, anybody else listening here online, I'm supportive of the compact and the essence of it. You know, we probably need one for sex predators and a whole bunch of other things that would have a virtual fence at our borders so they could stay in Arkansas or wherever. But in any event, let's go to Mr. Kevin Saxby now, Department of Law.
Just make a database for everyone. One
database. Mr. Chairman, this is Kevin Saxby. I didn't have any testimony to give. I'm just available to answer questions if there are any.
Yeah, from a legal aspect,
Kevin, as you think through this, are there any scenarios that you have any concern about that, you know, leaves people potentially hanging based on what we're being asked to do?
None that I can think of right now, Mr. Chairman. The committee substitute already takes care of potential commercial fishing issues, and that's been thrashed through a bit already. And the rest of it is something that 27 other states are already dealing with. I'm in communication every day with my compatriots in many of those states, and they haven't outlined any particular problems with implementing the compact.
Okay. Other questions of members? Representative Johnson, any additional comments?
No, Mr. Chair. I just I want to point out that as you look at the map, you look at the red states, and if you violated any of those red states, the natural place for you to go is Alaska. I think that this protects us from outside hunters much more than it ever will protect us against Alaskans going outside and hunting. We are a very large state. It is a protection we need. The ability for an officer in the field to issue a citation and not have to come off the field and go into a magistrate to administer that to citation to an out-of-state resident will keep our game officers in the field where they belong. So I just having going through this, I think it's time we go. I think we are the largest subject of poachers in the country probably, and this is just an extra tool for fishing game to ferret out those people, hopefully keep them from coming, and when they do come, have a little bigger of a hammer to deal with them.
Right. Would you share with us any questions that may have come up in previous committees of referral that caused you to do some research that maybe this committee ought to be aware of?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We dealt a little bit with the big game boards and commercial fishing and big game guides, and what was determined is you can't be a big game guide without a license, so if you lose your license, you'll lose your ability to be a guide, so that was not as important an issue. Commercial fishing is something that has been discussed with the compact to start dealing with in the future. We took it out of this bill because it just wasn't appropriate for the existing compact with the existing members. It's something to look at. I think probably the issue that we flushed out the most and caused the greatest concern was us losing control of our game and our laws. And I've been assured from legal and from everyone else that we still will be in control of our game, that nothing that happens in any of these other states will affect how we manage our game, how it affects subsistence, zero. So those are the issues that we talked about and were flushed out fairly well in the other committees. And I can't think of anything else. Jeannie, can you think of anything else we discussed that we really flushed out and had to do a lot of research on?
There was a fellow who wrote a letter saying that it was unconstitutional, but our legal department came back saying that it was constitutional. And I think that's about it. One question dealt with conviction, that if you pay your fine and do what you're supposed to do once you get the citation, are you still convicted? And we had to say, yes, you still are. You can pay your fine and do the right thing, but you are now convicted of whatever that crime was. You get 1 year suspended, 3 years suspended, or whatever it is.
Mr. Chairman, and that was specifically about, that was a contract situation that this individual was up hunting with a guide. Shot the wrong animal. The guide was looking at one. This other individual was looking at the other. They issued, we issued a citation. The citation was basically, they didn't revoke their license as a result of it because they did everything right. They took it into the fishing game. They processed the animal, turned it over, and they reissued a citation. But that person still had a contract with someone outside, happened to be, I think, Bass Pro, that said you can't have a citation. So even though we didn't revoke their license, there was repercussions against that person. But that was an individual contract that had nothing to do with what the compact did. That individual, I think, is going to come back and fight that to try to get that citation overturned so that person can maintain their contractual agreement as a professional hunter. But that instance was one of a contract between individuals and nothing really to do with the compact.
Senator Wagner.
Whose responsibility is it to make sure that once a person has completed, say, his probation or served his sentence or the fine that's levied on him is taken care of and everything, who purges his name from the list and who makes sure that is updated on a often enough basis that all of a sudden somebody doesn't, say, plan a hunt in Alaska, get on an airplane, come up here, go to a store to purchase an out-of-state Alaska hunting license and tags, and the guy says, oh, you're still on the list. We cannot sell that to you. You can't hunt in the state of Alaska. Who's going to do that?
Captain Waldron, can you address that in the process by which you go through administering the compact rules?
Certainly, through the chair. The individual, each state appoints a license administrator, and it is that state's, each state's administrator's responsibility to ensure that entries into the compact from that respective state get removed promptly when they're supposed to. So it would be the Alaska administrator's responsibility to ensure that once a Peter revocation for an Alaska case has expired, that that person's revocation gets removed from the compact, and vice versa. If it's someone from Alabama, we were picking on Alabama earlier, I'll pick on him again, I guess. You know, that the Alabama administrator would be responsible to remove people's names that were suspended or revoked in Alabama. Again, the my understanding of the list of the actual published list of revocations, that list includes start and finish dates. So even though someone may still be on the list, their finish date or end date for the revocation should be on the list, which would be accessible to whoever's accessing the list.
So in other words, if I'm selling licenses, I pull that list up, their name is on it, but there's a date on there that says, as of this date, they will have completed their probation or whatever, they're fine. So then I don't get in any trouble if I sell them a license and later find out that that's not so, right?
That's correct. That's my understanding.
Okay.
The list doesn't publish people's convictions. So if you are charged with a crime, and again, Alabama, and that crime does not include a license revocation, it only includes a fine, well, that conviction won't show up on this published list. The only thing that will be on this published list is people's revocations and the period of revocation. And that list is going to be web-based that is controlled through password access.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Question for you in reference to, let's just take, you name your small rural area and somebody, and there's an outlet for hunting or fishing license there. Are you saying that person or persons at the location that are selling the license will have access to the list?
As it stands now, no, that is not correct. Only Department of Public Safety will have access to it, and then fish and game people that apply for licenses over the internet. We do, because our licensing is not yet computerized, the list is not published to all of our licensed vendors. It's confidential information. We can't release the public that.
Yep. Okay, so I'm in Cold Bay. I want to go duck hunting or caribou hunting, whatever it turns out to be, and I buy a license there, the vendor doesn't have any way to check that.
That's correct.
So how long does it take to close the loop for someone to detect that I was in New Mexico hunting elk and I got a violation and my license were suspended a year ago?
Conceptually, it's possible that loop wouldn't be closed on occasion. That's another advantage to having our licensing computerized. However, if a wildlife trooper were to contact you in the field and check your license and your stance and your harvest and your bag limits and all those things, that trooper could then, after the fact, follow up and check the database to see if you're on, if you're listed on the database. If you're listed in the database as being revoked, the trooper would have one and or two avenues, certainly to try to contact you again in the field. But if you have committed that misdemeanor unsworn falsification crime that Representative Johnson referred to earlier, and follow up with a criminal investigation and criminal charges for hunting without a valid license and unsworn falsification. If that person had already absconded back to New Mexico, the citations would be served on that individual. If they did not respond to the violations, the citations in Alaska, well, then their license, their names would be entered into the database as being non-responsive to citation, and through a due process hearing in New Mexico, that person's privileges would be revoked until they address their citations in Alaska.
Okay, so let's take that scenario. If you're not checked by an agent, what's the likelihood that somebody will be able to detect that the license that you purchased is invalid? How would that be done?
It wouldn't be done often. We do wildlife troopers do take certainly not all of the license books, but many of the license books from their local vendors during the winter months, and check. We call them residency investigations, and I think Jeannie referred to, I think she said 30 of those filed since the 1st of January. That's the time of year we do those investigations, December, January, February. And now we would add to those investigations, not just checking people's residency issues, people that lied on their license about their residency, we'd also check people to see if they're listed on the compact database to see if they're revoked. I don't think I could even give you an educated guess of how many people we check and compare, percentage-wise in comparison to how many people actually purchase license every year. I couldn't even give you an educated guess. So it's certainly possible that it would never get checked.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Please.
We are, in terms of licensing, behind a lot of states. A lot of that is a function of connectivity, having the internet at every place we sell, a license. We've adopted a philosophy that we want a lot of them available for the people that come in, want to go fishing, so almost every charter operator can sell a license. This will not be as good a system today as it will be when we get the computerized capability that will allow us to run the check before we issue the license. But that's not a reason to not proceed with the program because of the other benefits that it offers. The ticketing of the violator in the field, which doesn't take the officer out of patrol. The calls that we receive from out of state asking if we are wildlife violators. When there are egregious poaching.
Let me stop you 1 second. Talk me through again the ticketing in the field.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you are, I'm an officer, and you violate, and you're from out of state,
right,
and I catch you with too many fish,
right,
the process now is for me to issue you a citation and take you to a magistrate to administer that citation.
Right.
If you lived in one of the compact states, mm-hmm, I could simply issue you a citation, knowing that if you left, you were going to be revoked in your home state and these 27 other states. So we wouldn't have to take that trip to the magistrate. We could issue the ticket and allow that officer to stay in the field and do his job, as opposed to loading you up, taking you into town or wherever it is. Some of these are very remote locations, and it's a full day or whatever, where that officer could stay on the river or stay in the field and doing his job, as opposed to transporting you back to a magistrate for maybe a fishing violation. If he issued a citation and you skip out on it, we're going to get you in your home state, and you're going to go on the list, and your privileges are going to be revoked. So we have that hammer that doesn't require us to go before a magistrate with every violation for an out-of-state violator, as long as they're a member of the compact states.
Okay.
So that keeps the officer in the field more.
Yeah, okay. We're going to hold the bill over. There's another committee that's scheduled to come into the committee room, and we'll bring this back before the committee soon.
other questions or comments before we go? Okay, thank you. We're adjourned.